Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
I desire for everything to go right all the time, and that does not happen for me. So I wrote something tonight called The Hypocrisy of Desire. And I think if I haven't shared it before many times, if nobody's heard, but I think that was the thing that really brought me to Buddhism, as the teaching about desire is the first, one of the first causes of suffering. The Buddha laid out the three first aspects of suffering was desire, aversion, and ignorance, or illusion. And for me, this like awoke something in me, because I've always seen myself as this hungry ghost, if you will, insatiable. And so that was one of the first things that really drew me to Buddhism, besides the silence. So I found this poem. I normally write a poem, but I found this poem and I thought it was such a beautiful poem. And I don't know who wrote it, so I'll share it with you. But a dog that weeps is no better than a dog who does not. Tears alone do not cleanse the wound. Guilt, no matter how heavy, does not purify the soul. But it does mean something. It means that you have not made peace with the darkness you have passed through. It means you have not crowned your mistakes as virtues. It means some part of you still remembers the shape of light. Guilt is not redemption. It is only the signal that tells you where the fracture lies. To drown in it is useless. To worship it is cowardice. But to listen to it quietly, honestly, is to leave space for change. Remember, my friend, the soul is not fixed by mourning what it was, but by becoming what it was not. You are not a monster. You are a creature in transition, and that is the most human thing of all. So do not punish yourself endlessly. Do not mistake suffering for virtue. There is a dividing line within the human psyche that is rarely explored. It divides us from a collective entity into the illusion of an individual. And while both aspects have their intended and even important roles, the fact is that all humans find themselves stuck in the latter, the illusion of an individual. It directs and distorts almost every single aspect of our living experience, and its name is desire. The strange fact is that at some level, whether extreme or extremely subtle, we almost never do anything without the need for. In other words, we rarely do something for nothing. These subtle desires operate at both the unconscious and subconscious levels, which make them difficult, if not impossible, to recognize and understand. And because we also see these at play in society, it strengthens the belief of normalcy. There's a great little quote here from Stephen Batchelor. Alone with our thoughts, far from other people, we compulsively nuance the definition of ourselves through shared words, images, and codes. The concept of self is intelligible only in relation to the concept of other. However vividly I seem to stand apart from you, without you, there would be nothing from which I could stand apart. Early on in my practice of sitting, I had this kind of vision or whatever in meditation, and it was as if I was sitting on the whole planet by myself on this like stump, this old stump or old rock, I can't tell what it was, but. And I recall having this feeling that although I was totally alone, I had no conceptual nature of who and what I was. I was just this living thing sitting on this stump, you know. And it woke in me this idea of our origin, if you will. That without the concepts and the beliefs and the opinions and the ideas that are thrown at us and given to us unconsciously, what would we be, you know, what would we be left, or what would be there originally, you know? And I think this is why I love this quote from Stephen Batchelor. However vividly I seem to stand apart from you, without you, there would be nothing from which I could stand apart. No definitions, no concepts, no beliefs. Just this breathing thing. Another way hypocrisy shows up is as a type of defense mechanism. The art of deflection, if you will. We blame others or use other shortcomings as a means to keep from looking at ourselves, as well as building the ego's illusion as a separate self. I'm not like them, or you can't understand me. All the while avoiding the reality that we can't truly know another's thoughts and motives. I can't truly know another's place. I can't truly step into another's shoes. There's a wonderful quote from Bill Wilson. It says, "The perverse wish to hide a bad motive underneath a good one permeates human affairs from top to bottom." So even the white lie becomes completely normal and acceptable in everyday life. One may even argue that it's totally necessary to keep the conditioned social gears running smoothly. Just another technique, just another defense mechanism. There's so many instances that you can think of in life that if it wasn't for the little infatuations or the little alterations of reality, people would have a very, very difficult time, you know. The interesting aspect of getting what one wants is that it almost always ends with suffering. Not because forms and material things are inherently bad, but because our true self, which we remain unconscious of, knows the difference between excess and necessity, which in turn creates conflict within the system. This is the quicksand of the ego's domain, as well as its paradox. The more confusion, the more we sink into the mire, the more we sink into the mire, the more chance one has of completely going mad, or, on the other aspect, to accidentally stumble into reality of wholeness, to accidentally stumble into awakening. Carl Jung says, But since everything living strives for wholeness, the inevitable one-sidedness of our conscious life is continually being corrected and compensated by the universal human being in us, whose goal is the ultimate integration of conscious and unconscious, or better, the assimilation of the ego to a wider personality. So to see this in ourself, to see this in oneself, this is something that's been coming clearer and clearer to me, is this dividing line, this invisible dividing line of this so-called ego to our collective self, is what brings so much conflict within the system, within the individual and the collective system. But as Carl Jung says, everything living strives for wholeness. So I think that's why we feel so much conflict within us when we're not living that way, you know, at least for myself. When I'm not living in a place of just openness to whatever's happening, there's a conflict that arises, and I still have tons of conflicts that arise. And as Thich Nhat Hanh says, without those afflictions, there is no practice. There is no awareness. If I never become aware of the afflictions, I can never use these teachings to learn from them, you know, to actually utilize them, to make them real in my life. But man is the power of the unconscious, is the power of the ego, something to marvel at. Stephen Batchelor wrote an amazing book called Living with the Devil, and it's about the relationship of Mara and Buddha. You know, Buddha being the awakened one and Mara being the deceiver, you know. And it just talks about this illusion or this desire to be rid of Mara is so powerful in us, but he says no Mara, no Buddha, you know. Without it, there is no awakened state, you know. And I really think that's Carl Jung is saying that same thing. Whose goal is the ultimate integration of conscious and unconscious, to make these whole, to bring them together, you know. The complexities of desire, strategies, and defenses is evident only when a contemplative way of life is engaged and sustained through persistent silent awareness. The realization or epiphany is not enough to outsmart or outlast ego's cunning stunts. The ego's intelligence is primordial and genetic. Our brains are what give it a voice. Primordial and genetic. Our brains are what give it a voice. And so Zazen is about awareness and nothing more. But to make the assumption that this is remedial or simple is very silly. Zen is about becoming aware of the whole, the everything, the totality, omnipotence. It may take one moment or 10,000 kalpas. So this dive into all these things, this dive into this this dive into not mourning what was, but becoming what we did not know, or becoming what was not, I think is such an amazing pointer at what spiritual practice is really trying to do, is to awaken that thing that we have all forgotten. And whether we forgot a small piece of it or the whole thing, I don't think it matters, you know. It's no different than me leaving my house without grabbing that one thing. I forgot it. It's so amazing to watch. I was talking with a woman the other night, and we were doing a book study. And as she was asking a question, her phone went off, and you could see the instantaneous, like, dread that came over. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she apologizing and turning her phone off, and then she couldn't finish the question because she got so derailed from the embarrassment of the phone going off. So later on, she said, I just lost my concentration, or I forgot the question I was asking. And I said, you know, the reality of the situation was you didn't forget it. The energy of messing up became more powerful than staying focused on what we were doing in that moment, you know? And it happens just like this for us, you know? So the energies that arise within us is what Zazen is really trying to show us. At least from my own perspective, from learning to watch what arises in each one of us. And sometimes and I know for myself, after sitting in Zazen for a while, I don't have all that, the bubbling up so much anymore. It happens in my daily life, you know? But as I sit here, it doesn't show up as much in those upheavals anyway. You know, I still get these little insights and whatnot that pop up. But what I see more and more is my interactions in life, and how there's still this, like, there's almost like this cellular, like, pullback from certain situations in life, you know? When somebody's being difficult or something is happening in life, I can almost feel my body, like, my whole body is like trying to ball up into a crumpled piece of paper, you know? And I think that's been happening forever in my life, but as practice deepens and deepens, I become very aware of it, you know? Or at least I'm becoming very aware of it quicker. And then the process to stay in it, to step in it, maybe even to step farther into it, you know, really starts to drive me a little bit more. So this part that it is very old, these things that we all carry are so primordial. I mean, even if we just look at the reptilian mind, we all know that this, from a scientific level, this is the very old part of the animal called human. And we're just animal in general. All animals share in that reptilian mind. And Zazen is the light that we shine on it, so that we see it as it arises in those moments of our life. So that I don't have to slink back into the shadows so quickly, you know, so automatically. And we start to see our connectiveness, we start to see the tissues and the bones that hold us together, not just the individual, but the collective tissue and bones. Without that blood, without all those parts, we don't do so well. We don't do so well. So if I wrote it in this sense of the hypocrisy of desire, because I think for so many of us, and including myself, I always had this belief that if I could just get rid of Mara, if I could get rid of all the bad thoughts, if I could get rid of all of the endless gnawing desires, then I would be happy. But I have to find a way to make peace with these things. I don't think they're going away. I haven't experienced it yet. I don't think they're going away. So I want to find a way to make peace with these, and to lose this idea that if the conditions of life would just suit me, then I would be fine. Then I would be happy. Then I would be at peace, you know. I want to live with the conditions rather than try to control them.